Welcome to the Human Capital Lab podcast, where learning transforms work and lives. Hosted by Executive Director Rich Douglas, we explore how education and innovation create opportunities to drive impact in the field of talent development. Get ready. Today's episode starts now.
Hey, everybody. Dr. Rich Douglas here, your host for another episode of the Human Capital Lab podcast. Welcome. Glad to have you. And today we have as our guest, Ken Stockman, who is a talent developer. And we're just going to kind of have a conversation about his background and some of his perspectives on the issues that are facing talent developers today. Ken has a long background with IBM and other ventures and activities. So I think that'll be interesting. And we're just going to see where it takes us. So Ken, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Rich. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Excellent. If you can give our audience an idea of your path, you know, as we know in talent development, people take many different pathways. Some come in from outside the field and they're subject matter experts who kind of bump into training or talent development and say, I think I'll stick around. Others of us are kind of organic and homegrown in it. I'm one of those. Right. What's your pathway? Where have you been and what brought you into this field?
Yeah, great question. So I'm, being equal, relatively new in the talent development space. I started my journey in 2013. I worked for IBM Consulting prior to that, for about 10 years prior to that, as a strategy and a business and technology strategy consultant. So I felt really kind of anchored me in lots of ways to doing what I'm actually doing now. And I'll get into that a little bit later. But I moved into the talent space first as a facilitator, delivering some of our consulting education globally to our more than 130,000 consultants across the world. And then was given the opportunity to take over that portfolio from a leader perspective. So learning design lead, learning consultant lead back in 2015, and then kind of grew up in that space, you know, refining that program, refining that offering in our space, and then ultimately taking over another portfolio later around new hire. So all of our grad hires coming in from university. So that was really cool because that gave me a perspective of soup to nuts, right? How you come into an organization and how you exist throughout that organization from a learning perspective. And then ultimately, just before I retired last June, I owned one of the business service lines. I transitioned into that space for a couple of years, which really ultimately gave me a lot of the ammunition to what I'm doing now, which is focusing predominantly on driving this deeper connection of talent development with business outcomes, with business results in enterprises.
So you said something very interesting that I want to make sure that people pay attention to. On the one hand, you said you retired. On the other hand, you're talking about the things that you're doing now. Share with our listeners that sense of, you know, when a lot of people, when they retire, it's like a horse race. They run until they're done and then they go off to the paddock and enjoy the feedback. But for others, it's more of a relay race where they hand off their former selves to their new selves. That sounds like more like what you're doing. So share with us, what does it mean to be you in retirement? And what are you doing now outside, now that you've retired from IBM?
Yeah. So when I left IBM, I didn't call it retirement. I actually called it my rewirement. I am, you know, I consider myself semi-retired, and I'm actively looking to stay engaged in the industry for some time. I've got a lot of things in my head. I'm working with some colleagues, former vendor partners of mine and whatnot, on just deepening my perspective in the industry. Having come into it so late, I'm really kind of feeling like I'm hitting the ground and kind of finding my legs here in terms of participating more broadly in this space outside of just work. Before, it was really hard for me to do that, just given the time. Mm-hmm. But now what I'm doing is spending a lot of time attending and speaking at conferences. I'm authoring lots of articles in different journals, writing some white papers. So it's really, again, leaning into learning more about the space and hopefully turning that into something that may be consulting related at some point to work with clients and kind of really help them build this alignment between business results and their learning programs, their talent development programs.
So it sounds like you kind of wandered into retirement saying, I'm going to be me, and then we'll see what happens and what shapes around me. I did the opposite. I sat there and said, what's this going to look like? Right. And then I architected it.
Yeah. Good for
you. So I think it's important for people to realize that there are a variety of different approaches that they could take.
Agreed.
And the beauty of it is when you get to still be you in that environment, sometimes when you let go of the organization and the responsibilities of the bureaucracy, you really do get to be more.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And then of course, whether or not you find things that you can get paid to do, you know, that can be a good thing too.
Yeah.
When we did a little bit of exchange, you mentioned your interest in learning versus performance.
Correct.
So I'm going to grandstand for about 30 seconds and get out of your way.
Sure.
I've been in this field for 45 years. More. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, as a result, I've seen the transition in our nomenclature from training to learning to performance and talent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that transition from focusing on learning, which is really about our stuff as trainers, as talent developers, and having our participants learn what we want them to learn, to performance, which is really about, you know, creating business results as individuals and organizations. And I think it requires a transition in our mindset as well. So what are your thoughts in that area?
Yeah. And I love that you said a transition in our mindset, because I think that's exactly what it is. I've been working with a colleague of mine on this concept of what we've coined as kind of performance first learning, as opposed to what traditionally has been seen as learning first learning, right? Which is you teach people so that they learn, and that the metrics that are built around that are related to how well they learned, learning transfer, how well, you know, they remember what they learned, which is good. It's not that it's bad. It's just that when learning is the outcome that you're seeking, it really doesn't do the business justice, right? The business is in the business of making money and growing, you know, for the sake of their stakeholders, their shareholders, as well as their employees. And so realistically speaking, if I look at what the talent space really is morphing to, it is how do we become much more strategically important to the business in doing just that? And the way that we do that is by really aligning what we're training people on to be specifically guided by the business outcomes that the business is looking to achieve at any given point in time in their trajectory. So that's really what we've been doing. So performance first is really taking the perspective of there is performance outcomes that the business wants that translate into, you know, what each employee, given their role, can do to support that performance. And that then is the design language you use to create your learning programs, not starting from the learning outcomes and the learning goals for that particular learning design.
So I'm hearing a transition there, as we mentioned earlier, from being a wizard, if you will, of the concoction of, you know, terminal objectives and enabling objectives, and moving toward paying attention to what people need to get done in their work. What do talent developers need to do to make that move? What are some of the things that they need to pay attention to, or that they need to do to go from being the wizards in the ivory tower to being good business partners?
Yeah. That's something that certainly I started to do at IBM. It's taking that consultative mindset. And I think that's really what, when I said that helped me a lot in my learning role, that background in looking and listening to clients and understanding what the outcomes they wanted to achieve, right? When I was doing that as a consultant, it was, what's the business transformation you're hoping to achieve here? Why are you engaging with us? And then what are the problems standing in your way of achieving that transformation? Same conversation. It's the learning team's ability to kind of come in and have those conversations with the business leaders. What are the business results you are looking for? How are you being measured today? Don't worry about the skills that you think your people need, right? Because that's not necessarily what we should be working on. But if you're looking to grow your revenue, increase your sales, decrease your costs, increase your market share, increase the resiliency of your organization through various means, Tell me about that. So it's about having those kinds of conversations. So where the talent team needs to get better at is understanding what drives the business. Each talent, you know, in my opinion, each talent leader should have a fundamental understanding of the business that their company is in, the language that they talk to their customers and clients externally, and how then to translate that into need in the form of, okay, what pain points do you see in the talent today that are preventing you from achieving the value that you're looking for, right? Where do you see deficiencies? And is that across roles? Is that everybody or is that certain people? So it's having those conversations to be able to kind of create pools of talent strategy for your leaders, for your salespeople, for your functional people, right? For your new hires, right, coming in. So that as a talent developer, as a strategist, you can begin to kind of lay out, okay, here's the portfolio of learning that we can bring to bear to help solve these problems and alleviate those pain points.
You brought up a consultative mindset, and I want to come back to this really hard. But first, I'm going to tell a joke.
Okay.
You know the definition of a consultant? It's somebody who takes the watch off your wrist and tells you what time it is.
Yes, I've heard that one before.
But let's set that aside, because being a consultant seems to me the vital transition for talent developers.
It is.
Can you be an effective consultant and be inside the organization? We know what outside consultants could come in and do.
Yep.
They come in with their expertise and they deliver and then they go away.
Yep.
But what about being there day to day? Can you do it? Can you be an effective consultant as a talent developer?
I feel you can. And really the biggest skill there from a strategist perspective is your listening skills, right? If you are getting invited to the business staff meetings, if you're having frequent conversations with your business leaders, more than your learning leaders, if you are finding yourself using their language more frequently, you will get to a point where the business people will suddenly take a look at you and say, wow, you know this business better than we do. And that's a great compliment. I've heard that time and again, not only as a consultant, when I was working with large clients. So, when they say, man, you know this better than we do, you're going to be leading this place someday. That's really to the state that you want to get to. You want to understand things almost better than they do, because the gaps are not always perceivable in terms of where the solutions lie, right? Especially from a talent perspective.
You know, as practitioners in this field, we get good at it. You know, we learn how to create training events. We learn how to create impactful moments for people, and even things that are transformative. But we also run the danger of reading our own press, you know, being very impressed with our abilities. And I want to bring something up and I want to get your comments on it. David Meister wrote a book called The Trusted Advisor. And in it, he really talked about what the keys are to being this consultant that we're talking about, and that you build trust. People trust you. They believe in you. They know that you are credible, you know, that you, what you say has meaning, that you're reliable, you'll be there when they need you, and you will be consistent. And then finally, intimacy. This is what we're talking about here, is knowing the business. I had a client, a home builder, and they were so good at this. You ask anybody, at least any supervisor or manager, certainly, and most of the employees, wherever they were in the developmental process, all the way from doing land planning, all the way through building and even post-sale customer service, any of them, sales, financing, marketing, ask any of them. They could tell you all about the home builder. And the only reason why I know it is because they told me. And I learned it over time because they knew it. And they talked about it all the time. They were intimate, when I say intimate, they were close to the business. They all were about building and selling homes, and they didn't mess around with that. Now, I want to get your take on something. Meister also says that stuff, that trust, gets reduced when we focus too much on ourselves.
Yeah, agreed.
In our ivory tower. So what can developers do to build that trust and put less emphasis on their own goals and needs and more on the organization and have people know that?
Right. So what I found in the past, and I read that book, and we used to teach that to a lot of our consultants, that concept of the trusted advisor, because that was our end game. It is about listening more than speaking, number one, right? So you should, you know, the old adam is you've got two ears and one mouth, so you should be listening twice as much as you're speaking, is very true when it comes to kind of filling in that role as a trusted advisor. Demonstrating clearly that what you're hearing is ending up in your designs. And one of the ways that I have been promoting doing this is through a transparent mapping of business needs, business outcomes, value drivers, to the talent pain points and the skills that need to be built to kind of close the gaps. So being able to demonstrate clearly to your clients, like, hey, look, this is what we heard you say, and here's how we've mapped this back to what it is that we do, where we are good, right, with adult learning and development, and showing them that it's not just about saying we're bringing this skill forward to teaching it to your people. It's we're developing programs that are guided by what you've told us to be is important. Right. And those conversations that we've had, and then the documentation of everything that we've heard you say becomes vitally important. And again, it goes back to that mindset. As a talent developer, you have to kind of walk that line between understanding the business side of the company that you work for, the enterprise that you're with, as well as then the industry that you're in, that what's going on in the learning industry, right? Understanding what's happening in the background. What are some new techniques and some new concepts that you can bring to your clients to kind of help demonstrate that connectivity and that transparency between those things?
Let's stay with that for a moment.
Sure.
I walk around with a question in my hip pocket all the time. Who develops the developer?
Yeah.
You know? Good point. It's like the shoemaker.
Yeah.
The shoemaker kids go to school barefoot. You know? So what can we do? What would you recommend that people in our field do to stay current, to continue to enhance their skills? I mean, there may be some obvious ones, but you know, what would you advise people to do to continue to develop and continue to be more effective partners with their business leaders?
I think first and foremost, it's take your own medicine, right? We profess to be the skill developers of the enterprise, and it's true. And our goal is to really improve the performance, the individual performance of our learners. You can't do that and then not live that life yourself, right? Meaning you can't ignore your own development. I wish that the company that I worked for last had a learning track geared to learning strategists, learning consultants, instructional designers, visual designers. We just didn't, which I think is a big miss. I think large enterprises particularly should have part of their learning organization geared toward internal development, you know, continually moving the ball forward. If you're an army of one in an enterprise, and I know that this exists because I've run into a ton of them, you know, I am the learning department. Makes it really hard. You know, having the go-to place for what's hot, you know, whether it's a learning journal, whether you've enrolled yourself in ATD, or whether you're part of another organization, focusing in the industry so that you can get at least take advantage of that connectivity. It's really important to have that personal development program that is going to continually evolve your capabilities as a learning leader. I think it's really important.
So I love the idea of taking your own medicine. Absolutely. So don't forget, you know, we've got to run just as quickly ahead of our participants and the people that we're developing in order to be there for them. I know you have an interest in co-creating or co-developing learning experiences, you know, our history, which I think a lot of the audience is. If you're here watching, you're probably looking in your rearview mirror at this anyway, but I still want to bring it out. Our history has always been that we're the sage on the stage. You know, we stand up there and, you know, we tell them what they need to know. And we've been talking about this already. But let's take it a little deeper. You're really interested in co-creating experiences. Why? Why do I need to get the participant involved? I know what I'm doing.
I think ultimately it's at the end of the day, it's about engagement, right? It's what are your learners going to engage with? They are way more likely to engage in programs that they've helped you develop. One of the last big things that I worked on before I retired was this thing called our Strategy Academy. And it was for our business and design strategists. And we had not only a cadre of managers who were engaged initially up front to help us lay out what their expectations were for these practitioners. But we also had a learner panel, like a focus group, basically, that would allow us to kind of take ideas to them and say, how does this seem to you? How does this sound to you? What would you advise? I mean, does this sound like something you would engage in? Now, this was being designed as a 15-week mega program, right? So buy-in and engagement was crucial because of the timeline. Not everything is that long or gate in depth. But I think it's still worth having those people who you can go to and get that insight that, you know, hey, I'm, you know, we're thinking about running this as an e-learning program. You know, give us some guidance. What would you like to be taking around this? What do you want to learn, right? That needs analysis that a lot of people talk about, but they don't often do at the front end of a learning design. Mm-hmm. It is a critical step in success. And it's also a critical step in determining whether or not you actually need a learning program or something else, right? Just a better knowledge repository or access to information. So I think that's, to me, one of the essential components of making sure that what we're designing as a learning organization is going to resonate. If you can bring people in at the beginning and have them tell you what it is that how they want to engage, what they, given the flow of their work, what would be most helpful to them.
Well, they're the ones that are there day to day. They're the ones that are experiencing the successes, the pains, and so forth. Who better to inform you? You know, in our field, we talk a lot about subject matter experts. But in the book, Novice to Expert, which is about how to develop nurses, it's a classic. The author, Patricia Brenner, talks about this is somebody who is good at what they know, but they're not so far distant from it that they've lost touch with it. And so the advanced beginner, and I wonder if we should have a new category called, based upon what you just shared with us, the subject matter advanced beginners.
There you go. I love
because
it.
Because instead of talking to just people who are detached from the work and maybe a layer or two up, how about the people that are going in there, putting their hat on and going into the mine every day and dealing with the challenges that they're facing?
Exactly.
And so by co-creating these experiences, we're really inviting them into, and you know, I'm going to stay on this. Sorry, I can't let this go. Not only are you going to increase engagement, but you can increase co-commitment. If I've told you what I want and you give it to me, I have to own it now. I can't go back and go, well, I didn't get that training. That wasn't any good. I didn't hang on though. My name is behind that now. And talk about getting people buying in and getting investments sooner. So that's amazing stuff.
Yeah. I am 100% with you on that, Rich. I was going to say, I'm 100% with you, so much so that I've actually just written an article, and it's going to be coming out soon, about this exact thing.
And one of the questions I was going to have for you is, where can people find out more about what you've written? So tell us about this article and who's publishing it. Where will people be able to find it?
It's going to come out in Training Industry. And it's basically a look at how we are getting co-commitment and that we need to get more of it to the learning cycle in any enterprise, right? In today's world, a lot of people, they get hired into a role, you know, the job description is there. Maybe they get told about what are some of the tasks that they're going to get to do. They get hired and then they get set to task. Go do it, right? There is no fundamental understanding that, oh, and by the way, from an expectations perspective, here is what we're going to be looking at for performance from you as you come into this role. And that could be as a new hire straight out of college, or that could be an experienced hire coming off the street into your company. Everybody's got performance expectations of the role they're hiring for. And so acknowledging that upfront and getting some level of commitment from that new hire that says, yes, I understand that to get to that level of performance, I'm going to have to go through some learning, right? And I hereby swear, however you want to do it, that I will commit to doing that on my part, right? I understand it. I recognize that it's a need. I hear the expectation. I will commit to doing that as part of my employment contract with you, right? That's my commitment to you. Besides doing a great job, that's my commitment to you. So a lot of that is going to be basically following along. If you think back to, you know, your college days, it's like, What did you get? What did you get into? What are you pursuing in terms of your degree? Oh, I'm getting a BS in anthropology. Okay, well, what are the requirements? Oh, these are all the requirements over the next 4 years. Do you have any ability to not do those things and still get your BS? Not at all, right? So why do we change it up in the corporate space? Why don't we set expectations up front? Why don't we give people performance expectations to graduate to the next level of performance? And so that's really kind of what I'm writing about right now. And it's really interesting to me, that co-commitment.
You know who does this really well is the military.
Exactly.
Yeah. For those of you who viewed this podcast, you know, I grew up in the Air Force and I grew up as an education and training guy. And so I was enlisted at first and managing on-the-job training programs. So these are all based on performance. Every job is broken down into tasks and your ability to perform them at various levels and your knowledge of them at various levels. And so we had this multi-tiered career approach. And each time you were ready to step up in your career, boom, here's your new learning. Here's what you need to be able to know, do, and feel at the next level. Okay, it's straight out of Bloom's taxonomy. And it's like, here you go. And then it's adjusted for each individual job. So we could be in the same career field, but we're at two different bases and we do things slightly different. So we adjust it. But the fact is, the career knowledge is right there in front of you. And when you move up to the next step, it's waiting for you when you get there. There's no other way to run a large organization that spans the globe. And IBM is an example of that. And I'm just going to transition into something else that I really would like to hear your thoughts on. You know, we're the largest economy in the world. We're 1/4 of the world's GDP. It's, you know, it's the USA, and very little else. But we know better because there's 3/4 of the world's GDP sitting out there in other places. And I have an in-law who is Bulgarian, working in London for an American company, happens to be IBM.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome.
So you talk about multicultural.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you, that was rhetorical. I know you talk about the global aspects of talent development. And I'd just love to hear some of your takes on what we as talent developers need to know and understand about that.
Yeah, the cultural aspects of learning are often, depending on where you're coming from, if you're an American company, a US-based company, you're going to tend to create learning programs that are representative of Western English-speaking culture. It's just a natural bias. But if your audience is made up as much outside of the US than it is in the US, then you really do have to pay attention to the cultural dynamics and the cultural needs of the audience that you have and have a very explicit strategy for how to get there, whether that includes things like translations or having, again, people who you trust in the organization review your material in a way that allows them to help you point out cultural traps or cultural issues or challenges with the learning that you've developed to make it more relevant for them. I often think a lot about programs that we've developed for places that we're delivering in like China or Japan or the Middle East. And not every lesson and not every bit of advice that we came up with in terms of how to do things was culturally relevant because of the way that they worked with each other, the dynamics of their culture, the level of patriarchy versus, you know, in that particular culture, all dictated slight changes and tweaks to what we did. So I would say definitely if you are in the talent space and you are delivering learning to more than just a US-based audience, understanding the cultural ramifications of the audience that you're looking for. So audience analysis is a big thing. Finding people who can speak on behalf of that audience, whether either from the learning organization who may be deployed there or just a potential audience member, is always a great way to kind of keep you on the right side of making sure you're not delivering things that are going to either leave a bad taste in somebody's mouth or just be wrong in terms of the way things are done in those countries.
So a lot of times when we do face this issue, we do talk about that. We talk about the landmines. You know, oh, well, don't step in this, don't do that, pay attention to your audience. And being culturally sensitive is certainly valuable. But is there something else out there beyond that's available to us that's valuable about knowing and leveraging other cultures in our talent development? What else is out there that actually is beneficial or positive about exploring and understanding not only just the differences in terms of the dangers, but the differences in terms of the advantages? Are there any?
I would say there are, and you kind of have to be on the lookout for them. I'll give you a good example. We had our core consulting program that we delivered for various levels of the organization. And basically it was once you achieve a certain level, you took the next level of consulting training. For majority of the deliveries that we did in Europe and in the US, it was basically just that. It was like, okay, here's what we're doing. And, you know, take this course. We'll follow up with you on your learning. And then we're going to leave it up to you to apply it however you see fit, you know, till you get to the next level of course. Our Japanese counterparts took quite the opposite approach. They mandated it because they felt it was absolutely necessary for growth in their organization. And they led the way in our company to kind of making ultimately the decision for this talent program to make it a mandatory part of promotion. In Japan, it became that. And so that way of looking at things in terms of the strictness of their culture, right, in terms of the application of learning to growth, gave us a tool and a lever that we didn't have before. And then once we did that and made it a part of the HR performance program, the growth program, it took off, right? We were able to scale it beyond ways we were able to do it in the past. So that might be an example of where you kind of take a cue from one of your partners and just kind of observe with what they do with things and how they use your program and maybe do some analysis. Does that make sense for the rest of the world?
You know, your story reminds me of something very specific that I went through about a year ago. I was sitting on an awards panel for ATD. And one of the applicants was a Chinese beer brewing company.
Wow.
And they had decided that they were making good beer, but they weren't making great beer.
Okay.
And they wanted to make great beer and market great beer along with the good beer. Okay. So they wanted to have a high-end product. They know how to do it. So they ended up partnering with a school in Germany, you know, that was a brewmaster school.
Wow.
And so what they did was this is why it triggered it. They mandated that their brewmasters would go through this program. Mm-hmm. But then what they did was first, they put them through a language and cultural experience.
Interesting.
Where they learned German and learned about Germans.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Before they ever arrived in Germany. And their success rate was off the charts.
Yeah.
Believe me, I voted them the award. I was like, you gotta recognize this.
Right.
They completely jumped out of their cultural paradigm and said, what do our people need to be successful?
Yep.
And by the way, you are going. So, you know, sure, they did some pre-testing, make sure they had language aptitude and all that. But other than that, they went.
Right.
And what I thought was the best part was not spotting that the brewmaster school was really great, but rather what do we need to do to enculturalize, to prepare our folks for that culture?
Yeah. I love it.
They're going to come back.
Right.
But they need to be successful there.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you the idea that, you know, not made here,
right?
Let it go, folks.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Where you can, you know, find the good ideas where they exist, and you know, especially if you're in a global role, try to capitalize on them, right? Or just reach out to your colleagues in other parts of the enterprise if you do have international offices and learn from what they're doing, because a lot of times you're going to find that they're doing something just slightly different enough that could potentially make a big difference in your own space.
Sure. I did a doctorate at a British university.
Okay.
And the kindest thing the university ever did was allow me to write it in American English. Because I don't know.
I'm sure you got a lot of feedback.
Unlike the Chinese brewmasters, I'm not sure I could have made that leap.
Right.
And they were very kind about it. They were like, we know how to read American English. It's fine, Rich. You can go ahead and write that. I was like, thank you.
In today's world, you could just get a ChatGPT to convert it for you.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah. This is 10 years ago,
right?
Before we had those kinds of tools. You're right. I probably could have fed it into ChatGPT and said, British this up a little bit. And if it didn't British it up enough, I could just say, do some more.
A little bit more. Yeah. Exactly.
That's great. Before we go today, I want to do a couple of things. One, I want to turn the tables and see if there's anything that you want to make sure our audience hears from you. And then the other thing I'd like to do is to, if you could share with us how people can learn more about the things that you're doing and sure. you're writing about. What would you like to tell them how they can learn, again, more about what Ken Stockton
yeah,
does?
Yeah.
So, well, anything that the audience would, that you want to make sure that they would hear that we haven't already talked about today?
My gut tells me that it is about the mindset, right? Just came back from a conference last week, the International Society for Performance Improvement, and had a lot of conversations about the mindset of L&D. And just, mm-hmm. you know, there are people who are just kind of still stuck in that learning first mentality. And, you know, it's how do you get unstuck from that, right? How do you mm-hmm. demonstrate a growth mindset yourself such that you are beginning to see that the industry is moving more and more toward performance? There's a guy by the name of Dr. Keith Keating who just wrote a trusted advisor book about in the learning space, right? And so I think there's a lot of this notion of becoming more consultative, becoming more performance oriented, you know, creating that dual brain of one camp in the learning space, one camp in the business space, and being able to kind of bridge the two. So I think that in and of itself is a big ask, but I think it's helpful. And I think it's helpful for not just people who I would say would be in kind of my role of learning strategist, learning consultant, things like that, but learning designers too. I had a conversation with a learning designer not too long ago, someone who used to work on one of my portfolios, who came to me and asked me, it's like, how do I do that, right? How do I represent that need to move in the performance direction as a learning designer? So we had a lot of conversation about, you know, what are the opportunities that they as a designer have to continually, you know, get to that notion of business outcomes and performance. How does it show up, you know, having conversations about what the flow of work is, what the tasks that need to be done, how do they look, you know, so that I can build them into the design framework of this learning engagement. So I think that's, to me, one of the biggest things following along this conversation, because I think it's growing in the industry, just based on the sheer number of people who are out there having it and leading it. There's another guy that I follow by the name of Colin Hahn, who I've spoken with, who's really big in this space. And, you know, there's just these multiple conversations that are happening around this move to supporting business outcomes more deeply. And I think it's great. For me, it's just through LinkedIn. I mean, I'm happy to connect with anybody and everybody on LinkedIn. The broader, you know, one of the things that I've been doing a lot since last June is broadening my network and having conversations more thoughtfully on LinkedIn that I wasn't able to have before. I am jumping into various programs, learning events that are happening globally, locally here in the U.S., you know, hoping that I'll be at DevLearn this year. So we'll see. But those are some opportunities where you can connect with me for sure.
So I just sent you a LinkedIn Connect, awesome. So I'm going to hold you to it.
Yeah, you will. I will.
Just this moment. Well, that's terrific. Ken, this has been a delight. I really appreciate you coming on and being so generous with your time and your ideas. It's this kind of exchange that I think pushes us all forward yep. into, you know, the next phase of our professional lives. So thanks for your contributions today.
Thank you for joining us on the Human Capital Lab podcast, a Growth Network podcast production in collaboration with Bellevue University. For more info, visit humancapitallab.org. If you were inspired today, pass the link on to a colleague or friend. Stay tuned for our next episode, and until then, keep learning to unlock the long-term potential of human capital.